Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
The U.S. military shoots down a high-altitude object found over Alaska. We'll have the details. And the race to turn AI chatbots into moneymakers heats up.
Microsoft is taking advantage of its investment in OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, and their hope is to pick off even just a little bit of Google's massive market share in the search business, which would be equivalent to billions of dollars.
Plus, the Chiefs face the Eagles at this Sunday's Super Bowl. What you need to know ahead of the big game. It's Friday, February 10th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The White House says the U.S. military has taken down a high-altitude object flying over Alaska's airspace. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says it was about the size of a small car, and the debris landed on frozen water, which could make picking it up easier.
The object was flying at an altitude of 40,000 feet and posed a reasonable threat to the safety of civilian flight. Out of an abundance of caution and at the recommendation of the Pentagon, President Biden ordered the military to down the object, and they did.
The U.S. couldn't say who owned the object, but Kirby said the U.S. had not attempted to reach out to China. Last weekend, the Biden administration downed a suspected Chinese spy balloon, which Kirby said was much larger and flying higher off the coast of South Carolina. Meanwhile, the administration is planning to blacklist about half a dozen Chinese companies involved in surveillance balloon production, according to a person familiar with the matter. The pro-Western government of Moldova collapsed today, just a day after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned that Russia was trying to destabilize the country. Inflation has soared in Moldova, peaking at 30% in December. In announcing her resignation today, Prime Minister Natalia Gavrilita said no one could have predicted the scale of the challenges her government has faced since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Our reporter James Hookway has more details.
There's been quite a few protests building up over there over the past few months, largely as a result of rising prices, particularly the cost of fuel. They're very dependent on natural gas from Russia, and Russia's been throttling supplies, of course, which has led to all sorts of instability and angst on the streets, really. And to a large extent, it appears that Russia's been pressuring Moldova in the same way it's been previously had been pressuring Ukraine to try and prevent it moving too far to the West and the European Union in particular. Both of these countries are former Soviet republics, of course.
Moldova's president nominated her security advisor and former interior minister to be prime minister in an apparent attempt to ensure some continuity. Also today, in a sign of growing security risks, the Moldovan and Romanian defense ministries said Russia had launched a cruise missile from a warship in the Black Sea, steering it through Moldovan airspace to a target in Ukraine. The Kremlin has not commented on that, the collapse of Moldova's government, or Zelensky's claims that it was trying to undermine Moldova. Meanwhile, Russia says it'll cut its oil production by 5% next month in response to Western sanctions. Western officials say the cuts aren't big enough to lead to major disruptions. They amount to about 500,000 barrels a day, or around 0.5% of global demand. Brent crude, the international benchmark, jumped on the announcement, but gave up some of those gains in later trading. It ended up nearly 2.25% at $86.39 a barrel. The Federal Bureau of Investigation searched the Indiana home of former Vice President Mike Pence today and removed several documents, including one with classified markings. The search comes after Pence's lawyers discovered other classified material at his home last month and turned it over to authorities. Pence's spokesperson says the former vice president's legal team will continue to cooperate with the appropriate authorities. This is the latest in a string of searches by the FBI after sensitive materials were found in the homes or offices of President Biden and former President Donald Trump. The Florida Senate passed a bill today that would give the state more control over the special tax district that houses Disney's theme parks. It's the latest GOP effort to rein in the company's special privileges. Governor Ron DeSantis has clashed with Disney over its opposition to Florida's parental rights in education law, known by opponents as Don't Say Gay. DeSantis is expected to sign the special tax district bill, giving him the authority to appoint members to the district's board. Under current law, that board is essentially handpicked by Disney. A spokesman for the company did not respond to a request for comment. Coming up, competition is growing among AI chatbots. More on their potential and their downsides after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
There's been a lot of chatter in recent weeks about ChatGPT, the popular artificial intelligence text generator where users can prompt the AI to create human-sounding responses to almost any question. Last month, Microsoft announced a multi-year, multi-billion-dollar investment in OpenAI, the startup behind ChatGPT, and other tech giants are getting into the game. Google has its own experimental service that generates text based on users' questions. It plans to integrate that technology into its search engine. So, what are the potential uses for this kind of AI? And what are the pitfalls? Joining me now with more is our tech reporter, Sam Schechner. Hi, Sam. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to talk with you.
So, Sam, real quick, let's start with a little reminder of what some of these terms mean. We've got generative AI and then chatbots, which are a type of generative AI, right?
Well, I mean, chatbots have been around forever, and they used to kind of work on almost like a logic tree, like going through, you know, press one for more options. The difference with generative AI is that you have behind it some kind of model that's like on the fly creating a response. And so you could imagine a chatbot that used to be really rigid and couldn't respond fluidly to what you're doing, suddenly now able to respond almost like you're talking to a real human being. It will give you an answer to almost anything you ask, even if, and amusingly sometimes, even if it doesn't know the answer.
So it's been a big couple of days for that kind of technology. This week, we had Google announce its own AI chatbot, Bard, a competitor for Microsoft's ChatGPT. Tell us about both companies' plans there.
Microsoft has, you may have heard that they also have a search engine. It's called Bing. People have long made fun of Bing as an also-ran in the search space. And Microsoft is taking advantage of its investment in OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, to integrate that kind of technology into Bing, as well as actually a whole array of other Microsoft products. And their hope is to pick off even just a little bit of Google's massive market share in the search business, which would be equivalent to billions of dollars. Now, Google obviously isn't taking this lying down. The company has actually been at the forefront of developing some of the base technologies that help chatbots with generative AI exist. And so this week, Google announced that they are going to release what they call Bard, sort of after the Bard, Shakespeare, to answer questions much like ChatGPT does. They're hoping to roll that out, they said, soon. And they're also hoping to use that same technology to help with certain types of difficult search queries in your Google search results.
So there's a lot of potential for this space. Besides being sort of a fun tool to use to generate text, this is an area that's really heating up for tech companies.
Well, I think you have a bunch of companies that maybe had chatbots before that weren't very smart saying, haha, we're going to take this and make our customer service that much better. And that turns out to be a huge business opportunity. You have Microsoft building ChatGPT capabilities into its Teams working product. So if you're having a meeting, it can suddenly help summarize the meeting and give action items to people who were in the meeting without you having to type those things out yourself. You know, everybody who's been in a meeting would like somebody else to take the notes, as we all know. And then there's the question of how could it improve search? Traditional search basically uses some AI in the background, you know, to do natural language processing on your query to understand what you're looking for. but it responds with links to outside sites, sometimes little pre-formatted panels of information that are, again, drawn from templated outside sources. A lot of people saw ChatGPT immediately as like, this seems better than Google search. It gives me a real, you know, summarized answer based on all the world's information, ostensibly. The question is, how useful will that be? I mean, only some of the search queries that people type into Google are actually worth money. You know, if you're searching for a product, that's something where Google sells very lucrative ads because they know you're in market for that product. But Google fully admits that a large amount of them aren't really monetizable.
There are some cautionary notes that experts are sounding about the potential of this technology too, right?
Well, you know, when you give computers the ability to sort of spout off human-sounding text, there's a lot of dangers. You know, one thing that has been maybe a limit on, say, a bad actor that wants to seed a whole bunch of misinformation across the web is that it's hard to do that at scale in a way that doesn't look very fake. The ability to generate very smooth reading copy at scale is obviously something that any kind of propagandist would take advantage of. And at the same time, you know, you might have a big search engine be worried about whether or not the results that it's delivering are accurate. You know, earlier this week, Google's Bard, in, you know, one of the first little videos showing how it would work, inaccurately said that the James Webb Space Telescope took the very first pictures of a planet outside our solar system, which actually happened long before that telescope was even launched into space. So these large language models, as they're called, make mistakes. And so that ends up potentially being problematic, and you have experts warning against a wave of false information on the internet.
Well, whatever the future holds, Sam, let's try a little test here. You have ChatGPT open on a browser on your computer right now. Could you type this in for me? What should I ask a human Wall Street Journal reporter about the future of generative AI and chatbots?
I've typed it in. Let's see. The cursor is blinking, blinking. Generated about 5 questions for me in just a couple minutes there, ranging from how do you see these models evolving in the future, and what are the ethical or privacy concerns that you see, what role do you see governments and regulators playing in the future of these models, and then, perhaps most near to my heart, how do you think the development of these technologies will affect the job market and which industries are most likely to be affected? As somebody whose job is often to write things in text, there's obviously a little bit of fear that these sorts of tools are out for my job. But, you know, I have to hope that human creativity and the fact that these tools are kind of giving the most general possible response leaves a little room for, I don't know, human wit and ingenuity for at least the foreseeable future.
We've certainly covered a lot of ground there, Sam, and plenty more to come. Wall Street Journal tech reporter Sam Schechner, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It was a really interesting discussion.
And finally, Super Bowl 52 kicks off this Sunday. The Philadelphia Eagles will face off against the Kansas City Chiefs in Glendale, Arizona. Both teams have won 16 games and lost 3 this season, on their way to the biggest football game of the year. Our sports and humor columnist Jason Gay says the two franchises were always among the favorites to make it this far.
I think this is a good matchup and one of the rare occasions where you can kind of say, look, the cream rose to the top here in the NFL and we have the best available game. The Chiefs are a perennial Super Bowl contender, of course. They've been here before, 3 out of the last 4 seasons. The Eagles went kind of wire to wire this year. They are an outstanding team, well-balanced, good defensively, good ball control offense. They have a proven winner quarterback in Jalen Hurts.
And playing opposite that quarterback will be Patrick Mahomes, making this the first Super Bowl with 2 black quarterbacks starting. Jason Gay tells us Jalen Hurts and the Eagles are slight favorites to win.
Which is kind of funny for them because the Eagles like to be the underdog. They like to be the team that no one picks. They like to feel disrespected. But given the fact that they have been so convincing in their playoff victories, it makes a lot of sense that they are the favorite going into this game. I'm sure the Chiefs take that as motivation.
And so you don't have to look it up, kickoff is at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time this Sunday. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Peter Granitz filled in for Luke Vargas this week. The show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Mohsen Ali, with help from Anthony Bansi, Kate Bullivant, Julie Chang, Daniela Cheslow, Zoe Culkin, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen. And editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Cosmides, Falana Patterson, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.